I want to spend a bit of time looking at accounting concepts. This should be revision for most of you, but these are really important with tax. Over a period of time, various accounting methods have evolved and they've developed into almost a rule book. And we know what to do, and these tell us why we do it. So the accounting concepts are a basic theoretical framework to control accounting methods. So let's look at the first concept. The first concept is business entity. The business entity concept is the one that separates the owner of the business from the business itself, and the accounting transactions that we put through the books relate only to the business and not to the owner's private life. Again, this becomes more important when we start to look at business tax. So the only attempt to show how the transaction affect the business owners is limited to showing the capital they've invested in the business and the drawings taken by the owner from the business. So if a hotel is owned by the business and the owner has a flat in it for his family, the bills will be generally paid through the business bank account. But some predetermined portion will relate to the private use, and that will be omitted from the business expenses to allow accurate calculation and comparison of the business profits. The law with regards to sole traders and partnerships doesn't recognise the difference between the owner and the business. So if a business cannot pay its debts, then the creditors can take action against the owner. The limitations of this concept are therefore that it is artificial, as the assets and the liabilities of the sole trader are still in law the owner's and not the business. The accounts don't state the actual assets available to meet the creditor's claims, and the assets and liabilities are included irrespectively of whether they are totally used in the business. The next is money measurement, the money measurement concept. So this is a concept that limits the recognition of accounting transactions to those which can be expressed in monetary terms. And since money is the common denominator to express the different facets of an organisation, such as the income, the expenses, the assets, the liabilities, there's a big disadvantage to money measurement though, and that is that the value of money doesn't remain static, especially in times of high inflation or high deflation. And it's also the case that the accounts will never give you a full picture of the business, because there are many different factors that can't be expressed in monetary terms. For example, good or bad management will have a big impact on the business, but we can't express how much in monetary terms good management is worth, or how much in monetary terms bad management takes from the business. Employee relations is another part that we need to have the full picture, but we can't express in monetary terms, or customer relations, or rival products that are about to take over the market. So all this information has to be excluded, in that we're not able to express it in pure monetary terms. Assets shown on the statement of financial position are all acquired at different times, and although the cost paid for two might be the same, the value of that money won't have been. The next concept is the going concern concept. So the going concern concept assumes that unless there is evidence to the contrary, the business is going to continue to operate for many years to come. So this is really important in tax when we start to assess losses, or when we start getting into the basis period, whether the business is continuing or going through a cessation. Without this assumption, every year the year-end accounts would need to be prepared on a winding up basis on what the business would be worth if they were sold piecemeal, and as such an auditor would then need to decide on the future generation of profits before the accounts could be certified to show a true and fair reflection of the business. For example, if plant machinery that cost £25,000 and was depreciated by £8,500, so with a net book value of £16,500. The company expects to use this plant well into the future and to charge depreciation on that basis. But if it wasn't a going concern, then the plant would need to be valued at its realisation value. What could it realistically be sold for in the open market? Which could be nothing if it was a specialised piece of equipment. So when we are writing up our books, when we're doing tax work, we need to do it on the basis of this assumption that the business will continue for many years. It is a going concern. The going concern concept is really important with assets that derive their value from the continued existence of that business. This concept also has problems in practice. Unless the business is careful, it can lead to some confusion and misleading information. Businesses can cease to trade shortly after the publication of their accounts, and what appears at one date might not be the same as the next if a business suddenly finishes. Owners could find that investments that look healthy on the balance sheet are actually worthless when they come to try and sell them. And it reinforces the use of the historic cost concept, which we'll look at in a minute. But the use of the historic cost concept, the asset's values may show a satisfactory return of the capital investment. However, the knowledge of the actual realisable value might tell a totally different story. This concept permits the valuation of stock at cost or net realisable value, but not current assets. This doesn't assume that the entity will be around forever, but it does assume it will be around long enough to get the use out of its long life assets and to pay its long term liabilities. The dual aspect concept is the basis for double entry bookkeeping. That is that every asset affects the business twice. That's when the asset is acquired, another asset is reduced, or a liability is acquired at the same time. And it follows that the assets of the business must equal the liabilities and the net worth. The basic accounting equation, I am sure we're all familiar with it, that assets equal liabilities plus net worth, so I'm not going to labour this dual aspect concept. Historic cost, this is the concept that means that transactions are recorded at the original or the historic cost, and any changes in that value are ignored. This is because cost is the least subjective method of measuring the value of an item. As such, the cost is supported by documentation, an invoice or a receipt. Unfortunately, this means that inflation can lead to serious distortions when current revenues and allocations are made on historic costs. It's not so bad now when inflation is low, but in times of high inflation it can make a huge difference. Over the last 40 years there have been huge attempts to change this to allow for the effects of inflation. There were even a few standards issued, but they've all been subsequently withdrawn because they're too complex and rely too heavily on some sort of subjective judgment. The other concept, this one has its drawbacks. Income is matched with expenses, but income will be at current prices, while expenses might be at historic. So the capital employed is also distorted over the years, and more so when inflation is higher. Periodicity. Periodicity, or the time interval. So this concept says that financial statements should be produced at regular intervals to allow for comparison. There's no reason why we can't have shorter or longer periods than 12 months, but the easiest way is to have a 12 month period. And this is one of the reasons that most sole traders have a year end of March. And we'll see though, when it comes to losses and the basis period, that not all businesses do that. And there can be valid and important reasons why this can be the case. So it shouldn't be assumed that all sole traders should end and at the end of March just because it's easier for us. But the periodicity concept really allows us to compare two sets of accounts without having to carry out really complex calculations every time we do it. The realization concept. So one of the problems with the periodicity rule is that it's often difficult to relate a specific transaction to a specific period. For example, imagine that a business arranges to sell goods in 2017. It delivers them in 2018 and is paid for them in 2019. Which year were the goods sold? Now, the conventional accounting concept would be unusual to include them in the year that the business agrees to sell them, because the business still has legal title to them. They could be included in the year when the business was paid for them, but it's customary to enter most transactions at the time when there is an obligation by the customer to pay for them. In accounting jargon, when the sale is realised. Many people have got into some bits of trouble with realisation. Tesco was one of the big ones. It was realising sales before they'd actually happened in order to make things look better in their accounts. The next one is the accrual or matching concept. This closely links to this periodicity concept, and it's used to match expenses to the period in which they were incurred. So, a misleading impression would be given if the cash received during a particular period was simply compared to the cash paid during that period. I know that this is something that HMRC are changing slightly with cash accounting. Although more businesses are using it, it's not everybody is using it. And there are a lot of issues with interest and loans and claiming motor expenses. So this one we're talking about, the period in which cash is received or paid has no relationship to the period in which the business actually carried out the transaction. So the bookkeeper would normally make adjustments through prepayments and accruals in the way that we've all learned. And again, this is important when it comes to tax. Consistency, again, goes back to that periodicity. Accounting statements require a considerable amount of judgment to be made in the application of the basic accounting rules. So what we say with consistency is that there is a lot of flexibility in how we can do things. For example, levels of depreciation. So consistency tells us that once we adopt a policy, that policy should be followed in the following years to allow comparisons to be drawn, and that it would be unethical to change those to give better or worse results. Now, that's not to say that circumstances can't change quickly and radically. So we can change policy in exceptional circumstances, but the changes need to be highlighted, and quite often the previous accounts should be changed to allow for contrast. Materiality, one of my favourite concept, materiality. So the strict application of the various accounting rules don't always work in practice, and it can involve a considerable amount of work that's totally out of proportion with the information that's eventually obtained. So the materiality rule allows other rules to be ignored if the effects are not considered to be material to the business. So, the materiality rule avoids the necessity to follow all the other accounting rules to the point of absurdity. For example, it would normally be considered unnecessary to value the closing stock of stationery or to maintain a detailed record of inexpensive items of office equipment. materiality essentially means we don't need to record every hole punch and stapler as fixed assets, even though they technically are. But it should be borne in mind that what's material for one business will be immaterial for another, depending on size. So this is where we might decide that assets under £100 will be expensed, but the materiality must be calculated on the size of the business. Assets under £100 might be right for a really small business, but for a larger business, assets under £500 might be more material. The prudence concept, the concept of conservatism. This is also sometimes called the pessimist concept, and this is where bookkeepers and accountants get that reputation for being pessimistic. This rule arises from the need to make estimates when we prepare accounts, and owners of businesses are naturally optimistic about the future of the business, and as a result sometimes are too confident about the future and not realistic. And because investors don't have control over the business, this helps the management not to indulge. So when we compile accounts, we never anticipate profits, but we always make provisions for losses. And this is why we have provisions for bad debts. It's one of the reasons, again, why Tesco got into a bit of bother when they anticipated those profits before the realisation, sometimes years in advance. Prudence tends to understate profit, and in the absence of certainty, be prudent. But remember, prudence is not legitimate expense for tax, so we need to add back things like the bad debt allowance, unless it's a specific bad debt. Separate determination is the concept that says we do not offset assets and liabilities against each other. We never net them. It's best described in potential gains and losses. So if a business has been sued by a customer for £10,000 and there's a high probability of the business losing the case, prudence tells us we should make provision for this. But if it's suing a supplier for £6,000 and has the same good chance of winning, it can be tempting to offset the two, but we should never do this. And the final concept I want to talk about is a concept we don't see a lot of, substance over form. So substance over form tells us that the legal form of a transaction can differ from the substance, and in this case we show it according to the substance rather than the legal basis. So that may sound confused.